Coach Talks, Coaching em Ação, um podcast de Madalena Sutcliffe.
Hi, this is Madalena Sutcliffe, and I just had a breakthrough-inducing conversation with Linda Keddie, a legend coach who has been in the personal development world for more than 30 years. One thing I learned about Linda is that she never says the same thing twice, because a really good coach has a million ways to help the client. To quote Linda, there are thousands of coaching tools out there that can help people live in a more peaceful place. By the time you've finished listening to this episode, you're going to know exactly how to communicate in your relationships if you're having any challenges. Linda Keddie is a Master and Platinum International Results Coach and Business Results Trainer with Tony Robbins, with whom she has worked in different capacities for over 30 plus years. Before working with Tony, Linda worked with some of the greatest personal development legends of our times, like Paul J. Meyer, one of the earliest pioneers in the self-improvement industry from the 1950s, Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins' mentor, and also John Gray, author of one of the greatest relationship books of all times, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Linda has an honors degree in engineering mathematics. She spent 20 years climbing through the corporate ladder to director of operations for a public listed company. She burned out and discovered the network marketing industry, reaching top pay levels in four different companies. For 3 years, she focused on building a vast membership base with Legal Shield and became a member of their prestigious Millionaires Club, and is still reaping the rewards of passive income 25 plus years later. Linda also worked for Peak Potentials, home of the world-famous Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar with T. Harv Eker. She is the creator of the Master Activity Planner, as well as the author of two books, Monday Morning Motivational Moments and Cancer is Great for Your Health. Linda is 74 years young. She is British and Israeli, and she has two grown children who live in Virginia and India. She lives in sunny Spain, practices Qigong daily, and is a passionate salsa dancer. Linda, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here in the studio. I cannot wait for you to start sharing everything you know with the world. Let me start with this question. You have been with Tony Robbins for more than 30 years. Can you tell us a bit about your journey and how that eventually led you to coaching with Tony?
Well, yes, first of all, thank you for that introduction. I was impressed listening to it. It was back in the late 1980s, when I was working in the US, burned out, and realized that I had to start my own business if I wanted to stay. And I discovered the network marketing industry. And in the network marketing industry, in order to build a successful team, I had to learn how to teach them. And teaching them the strategy of what to do was fantastic. But teaching them the mindset or the psychology was something very different. And that was my start in coaching, even though I don't think I realized at the time that I was coaching. I thought that I was training. Mm-hmm. So after many years working with three different companies and getting to the top of each of them, and they all collapsed, I thought there had to be a better way. And it was actually while I was building one of these businesses up in Quebec, Canada, that I was introduced to Tony Robbins. And it was a one-day event. At the time, I think it was called Strategic Influence. And I realized the importance of two things that I was missing, which was number one was my health, which was not in good shape at that time. And the second was my kids, who, after my second divorce, were in Florida while I was in Canada. And I realized it was time to change something. So I got out of the cold, I got out of the snow, and started driving south, got to Atlanta, heard that the Olympic Games were coming in a couple of years, and decided to stay a bit. I thought there were business opportunities there, which they were. And then 2 years later, Tony Robbins came, and he did the same event down in Atlanta, and I thought maybe it's a good idea to take my team with me, seeing that I learned so much the first time around. And then he talked about his 4-day program, which was included a fire walk, which I thought sounded really interesting. Needless to say, I had to do that and took some of my team with me. And from there, he talked about his university program. And I was just so caught up in this amazing society of people who really wanted to do something different with their lives. It was very different from the rest of my family, who thought I was nuts. They thought I was getting involved in some sort of cult. But this was back in 1994, and I started going to as many events as I can on a volunteer basis and learning what it took to actually start helping people who needed help. Mm-hmm. And again, today we call that coaching. Back then, I didn't really know what that was.
Yeah.
After several years of working the events in more of a leadership capacity, I was offered a position on their sales team, and I got to travel around the world with Tony for a few years and do sales, but that still wasn't it. And yeah. Then back in, I think it was 2013, I was invited to join their coaching team. Part of which was because of my ability to speak Hebrew. We had quite a lot of Israelis coming in. Mm-hmm. And even though I was invited to join the team, I still had to go through all that training as well. So that was the journey to coaching. But along the way, I met so many phenomenal people, especially in one of the network marketing companies I was working with, called the People's Network, or TPN, mm-hmm. where I had the opportunity to work with some of the most phenomenal personal development speakers, like Paul J. Meyer, mm-hmm. who was the mentor for Jim Rohn, mm-hmm. who was Tony's mentor, mm-hmm. Mark Victor Hansen, Les Brown, Brian Tracy, all of these incredible people I got to meet and work with. And so that was my personal development journey. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was the most gratifying thing at the events was when people were going through their challenges, that I had the skills to help them move through that and really make the most of the event. There were many times when I stood at the back door of the event as somebody was about to leave in tears and did whatever it took to turn them around and make them get back in the room, finish the event so that they could come out of there with everything that they dreamed about. So sometimes we just have to go through that pain
yeah.
in order to get to the other side.
Absolutely. What a beautiful journey. What a full journey also. You were just talking about these personal development legends that you met in that company that you were working for. What are some of the key breakthroughs that you got from one or more of those individuals?
I think number one was taking personal responsibility. Until we can do that and we can stop pointing the finger and blaming people, blaming circumstances, and look in the mirror and say, you know, I had a part in that as well. Even though we can't necessarily define that part, we need our coach to help us do that.
Yeah.
But once we start taking personal responsibility, it gets much easier to work through whatever it is we need to work through.
Yeah. Yeah, personal responsibility. And I mentioned in the introduction that you wrote two books, and I know that one of them, there was a special person who wrote a really nice foreword.
Yeah. So, well, just a little bit about the book.
Yes.
It started in 1998, where I had a...
This is the Monday morning motivational moments.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't called that at the time. It was just one Sunday night. I'd had a really difficult week. And I wrote an email to a couple of close friends. But I remembered, because I was also doing some work with Tony Robbins at the time, I remembered to ask the question, what did I learn?
Okay.
So I wrote about the challenge and I wrote what I learned. And the following week was way worse. And so I wrote again, this was my week and this is what I learned. And it was just a very, very difficult phase. Went probably for about 3 months. And then... And I was writing on a Sunday night.
Yes. So people would get it on the Monday morning.
They would get it on a Monday morning.
Yes.
But again, that wasn't the intention at the time. And
yes.
1 week I didn't write, and I got emails from total strangers saying, where's our Monday morning motivation? I'm like, wow, that's interesting. And I realized that my friends were passing on these lessons to other people. And so I continued to write. I gave myself an exercise because creative writing had been my worst subject at school. And I made a commitment to write, and I wrote every single Sunday night for 5 years.
Wow.
And after 5 years, these same strangers were saying, "Where's the book?" And I said, "Well, there isn't a book." "Well, we'd like a book." And I'm like, "Look, I don't know how to do a book. I haven't got time to do a book. I can't afford to do a book. You know, and you've been reading this free for 5 years, so leave me alone," basically. And then one night I had a sleepless night and I looked through all the printouts of all the writings I'd done, and I picked 52 of them that were not date sensitive, mm-hmm. and found a way to get them published. And Monday Morning Motivational Moments was born. And I asked some of these people, like Mark Victor Hansen, some of the names that I can't, Bob Berg was mm-hmm. another one, if they would write a quick testimonial for me, and also Paul J. Meyer. And Paul J. Meyer came back and said, "No, I won't write the testimonial. I want to write the foreword to the book." And that was such an honor. And so he wrote the foreword, and I got some other great testimonials, and I couldn't afford to do the book. So I asked people if they were, you know, if you want to get this book, you need to prepay. So I got 200 people to prepay for the book, and I printed 200 copies and made them limited edition. And Monday Morning Motivational Moments was born.
How resourceful. Yes. You were telling me before that creative writing was definitely your worst subject, right? And mm-hmm. there you are, publishing a book with a foreword by one of the most known personal development legends at the time.
That's right.
So never underestimate your skills, right? And when you mentioned personal responsibility, not blaming, but looking, you just said you were having 3 months that were tough, right? You were going through some challenging times. You didn't blame. You made the most out of it, right?
Yeah.
And when you looked at what did I learn from? What was the opportunity here? And then you wrote the book.
And I wrote the book. And during that time, I also went through a personal health challenge. And I went through a journey of cancer. Yeah. And I realized I couldn't do this by myself.
Yeah.
So I got myself a coach. And she was absolutely amazing. She helped me through 2001.
Yeah.
Which was probably one of the most challenging years of my life. And then I realized the power of coaching as well, and the power of having somebody who will not judge, mm-hmm. but will hold your feet to the fire.
Mm-hmm. It's a safe space, yeah. No judgment, but yes. We'll hold you accountable.
We'll hold you accountable, though, so there might be a few kicks up the behind.
Yeah.
We're not judging you, we're just moving you.
Sometimes we tend to get stuck, right?
That's it.
So what's one major lesson you can share with listeners about this book? Or off this book? And
oh my gosh, there were so many. I can think of some entertaining ones. After the surgery, a friend decided to get me two little kittens, and one of them was a ginger cat and was really mischievous, and the other one was a black one and very, very aloof. Just would sit in a corner and look at me. And I had them both neutered, and as soon as I had them neutered, the black one would come and sit on my lap. And so I made an analogy there where, you know, if you want to keep your guy at home, here's what you might want to think about. Sorry. Not sure if that was really appropriate, but it was one that I remember that was really entertaining. And then there was another one about weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Weeds. Weeds will grow all the time.
Yes.
And if you pull them out while they're still little, then you can get rid of them. But if you let them sit, their roots will grow so strong that you won't really be able to get rid of them for a long, long time. And, you know, our brains grow weeds.
Yes, automatically.
And, yeah, and we need to clean them out as quickly as we can.
Yes.
And having a coach really helps that.
So tend to your garden, right? Kill the monster while it's little.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. Linda, let's talk. You did already talk a little bit about coaching, but from another angle here. So, I mean, you've been in the personal development world for 30 plus years. you were talking about how at that time you didn't know it was coaching, or people didn't call themselves coaches. But what we see now is the coaching profession is expanding rapidly. I mean, there's more and more people and organizations recognizing the benefit of coaching, not right. just for professional development, but also for personal development. In the States, some people say they started to call themselves coaches back in the 1980s. There were some professional organizations like the ICF that were born at the time. ICF itself did a study in 2023, looked at the growing number of coaches. In Europe alone, between 2019 and 2022, it grew 51% in the number of coaches. Here in Portugal, we see that as well. There's more and more professionals offering coaching services in any area. But there's still a bit of skepticism. What's your take on that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think most of us are skeptical when we're introduced to something new, first of all. And the second thing is, you know, it was introduced, first of all, in the US. And most of the work that I did was in the US. And then I started seeing some Europeans start to come in. And it was really interesting because I left England in my early 20s and was not keen to go back because of what I felt was the small-mindedness of people who were basically stuck in what they knew. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, multiple generations of, you know, this is the way it is. This is the way it's always been. Stiff upper lip and all that, right? You know, and they were happy with that and didn't really want to expand that. But more and more Europeans and Brits especially started coming over to these events, and it just started to shift. I think also a big thing is that with a lot of immigration from different places, people realize that they have to adjust to a different culture. Mm-hmm. You know, so the second, third generation Brits were very used to what they had. But as more people came in and more adjustment happened, then we have to become more flexible. Mm-hmm. And this is where coaching can really help people. Mm-hmm. And can you repeat the question?
Yes. And you were talking about Schopenhauer before.
Yes.
Right? So yeah. The skepticism about coaching and how it's something new. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Arthur Schopenhauer, and he was a German philosopher,
yes.
I believe.
Yes.
And he would state that, you know, when a new idea came up, it was looked on as absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. After a short while, people would look at it and say, well, maybe, but they were very skeptical. Then more people would follow through and it became more generally well known until the fourth stage, it was fully accepted.
Yes.
But those of us who got in at stage one, we were looked at as just really being a little crazy.
Yeah.
And it's developing more and more now. So I think we're at, you know, between stage two and stage three, where there's still some skepticism, but a lot more people now are understanding that coaching is a very, very valuable way to help you get out of your own way.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yes. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Secondly, it's violently opposed. Third, it's accepted as being self-evident. I loved how you put it into four stages. Absolutely. And I mean, coaching is here to stay. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not going anywhere. What is coaching then and what is it not? How do you explain that to your clients?
Okay. What coaching is not, it's telling somebody what to do to fix their problems. It's also not looking at what went wrong, why it went wrong, who was responsible, and why we should blame them and end up going down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get anything done. What coaching is looking at your past experiences, paying attention to them. Also, I always like to find out from my clients is, you know, what is one thing in your life that you did really well. Mm-hmm. It could be really little, but one thing that you did well, because you've got that experience of success. And, you know, what was the most difficult thing that you've been through? So it's really looking at where the client is now, asking them where they want to go, but many of them don't know where they want to go. So helping them create a vision of what could be in the future and then creating a plan to close that gap.
Yes.
And that's what coaching is. And whether that's business, relationships, health, finance, really doesn't matter. And I mean, I've closed so many personal gaps myself in so many areas that it's so much easier with a coach, because the coach can be objective and not get caught up in the emotional side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely forward looking. The past is useful because maybe some stories are coming from the past.
Right.
We want to turn them around, but moving forward.
Exactly.
Closing the gap.
Exactly.
And I loved when you said most people don't really know where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So first clarify that.
Yes.
Give yourself a clear target. You just talked about whether it's relationships, finances, right? When we talk about relationships, especially because you met John Gray, author of, you know, one of the best-selling relationship books.
Actually, I didn't work with John Gray.
I met him,
but I worked with a lot of the others more closely.
Thank you for that. So you met him, though, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar with his work, I mean. But with regards to what you know, I'd like to... Can you give me an instance where you've helped somebody who's in a challenging relationship with a spouse or a family member? Can you give me an instance where you helped them? And how?
Yes, and it's current with, you know, several of my clients at the moment. Let me think of... Yeah, so I have an adult client who has a father in his 80s, and that father is very belligerent, always telling his 55-year-old son what he should do and what he shouldn't do. And so... this has sort of perpetuates into the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he goes to see his father once a week. So we had to look at, you know, why does he feel that sense of obligation if he's going into something that he knows is going to be difficult? It's repeating that pattern that is not working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he decides that, if he feels it from a moral sense of obligation, because he's also quite religious, then would it be a good idea to look at the father through a different lens?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the question, I said, what would you feel, and I usually do this through a closed eye process, what would be different if you believed that your father's intention was pure, but that he just didn't have developed communication skills? And it was an absolute breakthrough for him, because he was trying to change his father's method of communication, which in the 80s, you know, father's in his 80s, that's not going to happen. But he could change his lens through which he looked at his father, and it became easier for him. His father didn't change. The last conversation we had was when his father offloaded once again after, I think, a meal in a restaurant. And my client, instead of shouting back at him, said to him, "I'm sure you feel better now that you got that off your chest." It's like,
wow.
Major breakthrough.
Yeah, no, not in a reactive state now.
Not in the least. Not in the least, but, you know, endorsing his father for being able to say what he needed to say.
Yes.
Without judgment.
So changing perceptions is very important, right? If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change.
There you go.
Wayne
Dyer
said that. And you talked about communication, how the father maybe just didn't know how to communicate. And we were talking about a good communication model when it comes to challenging relationships. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So you know, rather than getting triggered straight away and reacting straight away, it's much better to walk away and create a plan to change this.
Mm-hmm.
And that plan should always start with, you know, what do I really want in my relationship with this person, and why is that important?
Mm-hmm.
So how can I do this? Well, the first thing to do is remember that any sort of feedback could be perceived as criticism. Yeah, even if it's not intended as criticism. So we always want to make sure that this model that I will explain in a moment should never be used in the same emotional state, the same tension, or the same location in which it was created. So if somebody had a fight with their spouse in the house, don't try and fix it there. go for a walk together, go into a different environment. Mm-hmm. So that's the first piece of it is where do you, you know, how and where do you give this input or feedback to your partner so that you can actually communicate your desire. And so number one is you always want to start with what you love about them. Even if you're not feeling loving, find something that you love about them and let them know that and express that. And this is what I love about you.
Specifically, right?
Yes, something very specific. And then go on to, and when this situation happened, not when you did or when you said, but when this situation happened, that's the second piece. The third piece is I felt. Tell them how you felt. Tell them about the emotion that you felt. And then the next piece, which
and
is...
And not you made me feel, right?
Yeah,
I felt this.
Yeah. So not you said you made me feel. This is what happened. This is how I felt.
Yes.
And then the next piece is really important. And I know that's not your intention. Now, even if in the back of your mind you thought, yeah, they did plan to do that and make me upset, you've got to add that piece. I know that your intention was pure. I know that wasn't your intention. And then the final piece is, in the future, if this situation comes up, I would prefer.
Yes.
And then you finish it up again. And I'm telling you this because that's how much I love you.
Yes.
And want to get this so that we never go through this again.
That's beautiful. So in reality, if we could condense it into five steps, you know, change locations.
Yes. Number one, ensure that you're in a calm state of mind. Number two, change location.
Okay.
Number three, give a true compliment. Mm-hmm. Number four, explain the situation objectively. Number five, talk about how you felt. Number six, I know that wasn't your intention. Number seven, in the future, I would prefer. And number eight, finish off with how much you feel for them.
Beautiful. So eight simple steps in a beautiful communication model. Whenever you want to communicate and you're having some challenges, follow these eight steps. Brilliant.
Beautiful.
Linda, final question. What is one tool or technique, and we can do it in the relationship arena if it makes sense as well, that you want to share with listeners that they could apply it right now to start fostering some positive changes in their life?
Gosh, I don't even know where to start. Where I usually start with a new client is I talk to them about four levels of consciousness.
Okay.
The first level of consciousness is what we call unconscious incompetence, which is the silly stuff that we do that we don't even realize that we're doing.
And that's not serving us.
Absolutely not serving.
Yes.
Yeah. And the second level is what we call conscious incompetence. And that's the coach's job is to point out kindly what their client has been doing over and over again, the patterns they've been doing that don't serve them. So the conscious incompetence is the awareness, which is like, oh my goodness, have I really been doing that all this time and not realized? Mm-hmm. The third level is what we call conscious competence. And that's when we start creating new behaviors, new patterns, but we have to practice them and condition them through what Paul J. Meyer calls spaced repetition, over and over again until they become unconscious and they become a new habit. It becomes part of who we are, what we do. It's almost like creating a new identity.
Mm-hmm. So it's a habit, it's automatic, it's in my body.
Yeah, and it's like a smoker trying to give up smoking, mm-hmm. which is really tough.
Yes.
But when that smoker takes on the identity of a non-smoker, they would never dream of having another cigarette.
Yeah.
And that goes hand in hand with patterns. You know, first of all, we have to recognize the pattern that we are working, which is, again, the responsibility of the coach to point out the pattern. So we have to recognize the pattern so that we can interrupt it and start creating a new pattern or behavior that we then need to condition over and over and over again until, again, it becomes like a new identity.
So how could you apply this to a relationship? So, or give me a specific example that we can share with our listeners.
To relationships. Okay, so first of all, you have a couple that continue to poke one another and poke fingers at one another, point fingers, blame, and everything. So first of all, they have to recognize that.
Yes.
And until they recognize that, they're not going to do anything about it because they think, well, I can't help it. You know, it's just it's my automatic response.
Yes.
It's not my fault. The other person has to change. So that's where the coach comes in, right? Okay. The second thing is it's recognizing, and this is actually important, once that emotional state has passed, then it's important to take a moment and look back and see what triggered that. Was it the expression on my spouse's face? Was it a word that he or she used? Was it something they did with their body? But until you recognize the trigger, you're going to keep being triggered. So it's important to take the time to step back and say, what was it? Was it that piece of music that I heard again that made me cry, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So once we recognize the trigger, then we have a choice, okay? We can either keep doing the same thing, insanity, or we can avoid the trigger by just not playing that piece of music again. But if it's in relationship, that partner's a little difficult to avoid. So now we have to look at a different situation. And one of the things, if both partners are willing to play, you can have them make fun of one another, you know, in a funny way. You know, you see your spouse is getting all tense and everything. You can sort of wiggle your nose or whatever, do something weird with your body to make them laugh, because that way
shake
you're
your
interrupting.
Booty. That's what
yeah,
you
shake your
did.
Booty, because otherwise, you know, and that's interrupting their pattern. So you can learn how to interrupt that pattern, and it brings that energy down. But ultimately, you still have to work on, you know, the deeper issue and why you get more satisfaction out of irritating each other than you do out of loving one another. Mm. And that's, you know, that's part of some of Tony Robbins' work with the six human needs, is which need are we meeting? And are we meeting our needs in a healthy way or in an unhealthy way? You know, because most of us want this, we want to feel comfortable, we want to feel certain. Mm-hmm. And we can feel certain that when we say something, our spouse is going to blow up. Or we can feel certain that we can go out and have a beautiful dinner together and a nice romantic evening. I mean, it's a choice.
Yes.
But people don't know they have a choice if they're not recognizing the trigger, and they get more certainty from staying in that place that is not working for them.
Yes, it's not serving them. So yes, I mean, why we do what we do, right? Tony Robbins' TED Talk. Everything
yeah.
is to meet a need. So if they're fighting constantly, there's a need that's being met in an unhealthy way.
That's absolutely it. Yes.
And Linda, you were, just one final question. You were talking to me about how there's some habits. You said the three C's, the three U's in
yeah.
relationships.
So, yeah, in relationship, this is it. If you want to know how to mess up a relationship, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a woman and you want to know how to mess up a relationship, try and control your spouse, criticize your spouse, or take away intimacy. We call that cold, the three C's.
Yes.
Okay. If you don't want to mess up a relationship, don't criticize. Don't try and control, and stay connected. However, it's not about the fact that you are criticizing or controlling. It's about what's being received.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you're stating something and you're just wanting to give direction, if he perceives it as control, you've messed up.
Yes.
So finding better harmonious ways of doing that. So, but this is the biggest challenge in relationships is, well, you know, I told him he should.
Yes.
Okay, there you go. How's about, honey, how's about we do this, you know, can we do this together a little differently, you know, bringing it together as opposed to that separation. So again, it's about how they feel, not what you said or did.
Yes.
With a woman, we call it the three U's.
Okay.
It's feeling.
So if a man wants to mess up the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the man usually, well, I don't know, sometimes they do. It depends what they've got on the side, right? So if a man wants to mess up a relationship, make your woman feel unseen.
Yeah.
All that unseen means is give everybody and everything else and your work priority. Mm. She feels unseen. Yeah. It's not that she is. She feels unseen. The second one is make her feel unheard. When she has a challenge and comes to you with a challenge, fix it every time.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't want it to be fixed. She just wants to tell you. She just wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
But every time you go in and fix it, she's feeling unheard. Mm-hmm. And then the third is pretty obvious, and that's unsafe, whether that's physically, emotionally, or whatever. But those three C's and three U's, pretty much every single client I have, when we look at what's going on in a relationship, they can relate to these.
And it's such a beautiful framework when you were talking about unconscious incompetence. If you have some habits unconsciously and you want to start to bring them to your consciousness, maybe, you know, in a relationship, start to look at, am I, you know, if I'm a woman, am I criticizing, controlling, mm-hmm. closing off? Or if I'm a man, am I seeing her? Am I
right.
hearing her? Right. It's a beautiful, beautiful framework. Thank you for that, Linda. Thank you so much for sharing this incredible knowledge, these tools with us today. I thank you on behalf of all of our listeners. My three big takeaways from what you shared today, and they mm-hmm. sort of really link to each other. Personal responsibility, you started with that one, you know, blaming
right.
people, blaming situations, blaming events, or blaming yourself won't help, right? Because it's taking the responsibility that you can take to solve this out of yourself.
Yeah.
So
out of the comfort zone, though.
Exactly.
Yes.
So take personal responsibility. That also got you to write a book. So don't limit yourself to thinking that you're not good at writing, but perhaps you are, right? Second big takeaway, this communication model with these clear 8 steps. If you want to communicate, if you want to give feedback, first of all, change location if you're having a fight, right?
Yes.
Change that emotional state.
Yes.
And start with something great and end with something great. And the third big takeaway now was I loved how these two little tools related to each other. First, look at yourself. What are some habits that are not serving you that perhaps you're doing unconsciously in a particular relationship? Are you adopting those behaviors? Why also? So thank you so much, everyone listening to us today, for investing your time to be here with us. And I ask you at home, what are you going to do today to start making the changes you want to see in your life? Are you going to do what Linda suggested? You know, have a look at your habits. Have a look at, you know, what is something that you're doing that is not serving you? How could you interrupt that pattern and create something new that is more sustainable? So remember, we are not the product of our circumstances. We are definitely the creators of our life. Start designing your life today. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you so much, Madalena. Absolute pleasure being here. A real honor working with you. And look forward to knowing that we've made a difference in the lives of the listeners if they just take one little thing and apply it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Linda.
Coach Talks. Coaching em Ação. Podcast de Madalena Sutcliffe. Podcast Bauer Media Áudio Portugal.